we wanted to let you know about a new podcast, The Peak Weekly. Each week, The Peak's Brett Chang and Alex Blumenstein talk to the most interesting people in Canadian business. Featuring interviews with Canadian leaders in tech, culture, and finance, The Peak Weekly is the fastest way to get smarter about business. You can subscribe to it wherever you listen to podcasts. Just search for The Peak Weekly.
The Cambie Report was produced and recorded on the traditional and unceded territories of the Musqueam, Squamish, and Tsleil-Waututh Nations.
It is January 15th, 2021, and there are 638 days until the Vancouver municipal elections. This is the Cambie Report. I'm Matthew Naylor.
I'm Ian Bushfield.
Well, we are back after a
holiday break.
Yeah, a holiday break and a fun New Year's Eve-ish show, which I very much enjoyed doing. Technical problems notwithstanding, I finally have my computer back and it, touch wood, mostly works. How have you been? How have you been keeping it exactly the same by any chance?
That's just what it is, right? I mean, I did have to salvage a laptop. I killed a hard drive over the holidays, but luckily my partner also had a dying laptop and we were able to Frankenstein together one working laptop out of two. So different computer issues.
Yeah. A new modern Prometheus. And to keep jokes like that flowing into your ears, please do check out our Patreon page at patreon.com/CambieReport.
Patreon.com/CambieReport.
So a big announcement there that the donations can now be in Canadian dollars.
It just makes it easier for everyone.
Yeah, it's fantastic.
We also turned on the annual membership feature, which Patreon pushed us to do. I don't know. They said, here's an option where your supporters could give you 12 months worth of money all at once. And I'm like, that sounds good for us. To make it good for you, we discount your 12 months a little bit. I mean, it's a donation to us pretty much. So I don't know what a discount on a donation is, but consider giving us 12 months of money up front. It makes our budgeting a bit more secure for the year. We don't have to worry about people's credit cards expiring in June.
So you get access to an ad-free feed. If you subscribe at over $5, you can get access to our very active Slack community, which is always a delight and always filled with like insightful and interesting topics on things that are a little, that can, even for the Cambie Report, get even more like granular and specific, which is why for this community of nerds, it actually, I think, is probably going to be a pretty good deal for all of you. That is a good decision that you could make. People have been known to make bad decisions. I think we could highlight one of them. Well, let's start with my own personal reaction to the events of January 6th. And believe me, there is going to be a municipal angle to this in a second. But I did not take that well. I'm really glad that the U.S. has managed to move slowly and shambolically in the direction of actually calling for some accountability for once. But man, it was a taxing time in my brain for those couple of days when it looked like the U.S. might descend into civil war. And now even like looking back, it seems like we were in a lot more danger than I think people gave credit for in the moment.
Yeah, I have the privilege in some ways of having a toddler to look after, so I couldn't devote the focus and mental energy to following Twitter nonstop and realizing how bad things were getting early in the day there, other than people starting to be like, how can you just like have random DM conversations when there's a coup happening? And I'm just like, I'm choosing to ignore the world.
I mean, how can I? Because it's the only way I can freaking talk to people. It's this event, this, I don't know, another beep on the EKG machine that's measuring the American democracy on life support as it transitions horrifyingly from, you know, let's say absolute red triage level to maybe a bright orange. People have had some unusual takes on it. One of those people was Counselor DeGenova, who compared the January 6th U.S. Capitol riots to a 2017 protest where Gene Swanson and housing and homelessness advocates occupied the council chambers.
Yeah, so George Affleck first tweeted out on January 8th, so 2 days after the riots and events happened. He said, "That day in 2017 when at City of Vancouver City Hall chamber was taken by protesters and democratic processes was halted, among those who took our seats was Order of Canada recipient and now hashtag Vancouver City Councillor Gene Swanson," to which MDG retweeted it with the quote tweet, "Yep, photo looks a lot like the protesters who took Pelosi's chair yesterday. This still isn't as bad as the day the same group chased council down the street. Remember that at George Affleck? Swanson led that one too." I haven't been able to figure out what event she's referencing when Gene Swanson, I guess, chased George Affleck and Vancouver City Council down the street. I did find a George Affleck editorial where he references it, but I don't remember this event. Maybe it happened.
I don't remember this event either, and I am perplexed. Let's just say that. I think that the good ship perspective has left the harbor, ran aground on some hidden rocks, and then sank slowly without anyone noticing. Because while this may have a superficial, and I emphasize those words, single word, strenuously here, there is a superficial resemblance to the events in which Vancouver City Council was inconvenienced. This was one, not at all equivalent, which you could figure out if you, for example, played the tape with the sound on, among other things. There is a strong difference between a very ancient and venerable tradition of peaceful protest and the even more ancient practice of coming in with sticks and hitting everyone until they do what you say.
Yeah, that's the thing. We have to, like, maybe it's worth just talking about what the 2017 event when City Hall was occupied was. That was Gene Swanson and I think about a dozen largely left-wing advocates, activists from a number of communities she's connected with, essentially going in, occupying the council chambers and holding a mock city council meeting where they passed symbolic motions giving money to homeless groups or whatever they needed to do. I think this was when Gregor Robertson was still mayor. They held a emergency council meeting outside on the steps just to, I think, postpone their meetings of the day because they couldn't easily hold council in the chambers. And I think they were inconvenienced for 2 to 4 hours. The U.S. riots and involved guns and white supremacists by comparison.
Yeah. And I think that is a salient difference. More the guns thing. Like, I am not a white supremacist and still have to support their ability to yell at it indiscriminately outside. But, like, I also have to, because it's the only way that I am going to be protected from people, like, yelling from people who are trying to stop me when I'm speaking. The things that they were doing, I think, cross the line into one, incitement to violence, which is kind of akin to Oliver Wendell Holmes's statement on the Supreme Court, you can't yell fire in a crowded theater. And that's what the president was effectively doing, is just yelling fire, although he was directing that to a firing squad.
Well, and it's worth even just pointing out, like, and it doesn't get remembered enough, the people on this January 6th planted bombs around the Capitol that were all defused.
Yeah.
Like, it was clear that was going to go much worse if the little sick police that were there weren't able to stop them. Like, I'm pretty sure they were going to kill someone if they had gotten the chance to.
Yeah. I mean, if you have an angry mob that is chanting, among other things, hang Mike Pence, you kind of have to take the angry mob at its word that this is their intention.
Yeah. Nevertheless, MDG doubled down on her take with a follow-up tweet that said, in a democracy, storming in and shutting down a Congress, legislature, even a city council is never the right thing to do in Washington or Vancouver. And I think it's both rooted in the idea where you're talking about how these are superficially similar, in that just interrupting democracy is an affront to democracy, which misses, I think, what you alluded to, that protest, even inconvenient protest, which is all of protest should be inconvenient, or else it's just, I don't know, people talking at themselves.
Yeah.
Protest is a part of democracy.
I've always been a little like perplexed by the people who, like, during strikes saying, yeah, we just want to inconvenience people as little as possible. I'm like, well, then why are you striking? Why even bother with the whole thing at all? Isn't the point to put pressure on consumers, to put pressure on the employer that they are patronizing? To, you know, maybe I'm wrong about the whole nature of labor politics, and, you know, given my political pedigree, that's probably the case. But I think there is a bright line to be drawn between people who broke in to hold a mock council meeting. I mean, yeah, sure, fine. It does inconvenience people and mildly hold up the ratification of the minutes from the meeting last week. Like, it's the scale of what was happening is so manifestly different that I have trouble wrapping my mind around the mindset that would allow someone to send out such a wrong-headed tweet. The people were calling for the violent overthrow of the government. And that's not the housing people. Those are the people at the Capitol. They were calling for the violent overthrow of the government. And then also complaining when they were maced while violently overthrowing the government, which I thought was adorable.
Yeah, I don't think we've had any calls for violent overthrow of Vancouver City Council. The most you'll get is someone should be democratically replaced in the next election by someone who cares about my issue.
And that's because we've all bought into the idea of this polity. And that is our bright line, is that the people who are protesting or rioting have either bought into the idea of their polity or are trying to overthrow it. They stand opposed to it. And that is unquestionably what the people of the Capitol want.
The tweet was called out on Twitter by fellow councillors Rebecca Bly, formerly of MDG's party, Pete Fry, and Kennedy Stewart, at very least. I didn't do a full survey, but I did see they all replied directly to her going, what are you talking about? This is not helpful.
Yeah. Admittedly, we have spent far more time on this than the one tweet deserves, but I do think it is worthwhile and important for us to keep perspective, because otherwise we can all lose our minds and start demonizing the people who are still members of the same body. They are still like part of the polity, and they just want to change direction a little bit rather than throw the entire baby out with the bathwater. If we start demonizing people who we only disagree with a little bit, who are respectful of our institutions, maybe not as reverent as you are, but still respectful of them. I mean, they broke in and occupy council chambers to hold a mock council meeting. They didn't suggest hanging the vice president.
Yeah. Well, from the tensions within the NPA, we can go from the NPA caucus to the NPA board, where one of their members made a Vancouver Sun news story by Dan Fimano in a very weird way. What happened?
Yeah, so this is a company that was owned by Dave Payson, who is on the MPA board. He's ran for public office with the MPA in the past, most recently for the park board, and is also just sort of generally a right-wing municipal commenter and activist. He basically failed to get a business license to use a warehouse. So he runs this cleaning product company operating out of an East Vancouver warehouse. And it just was operating there at 550 Malkin for 6 months without any business license of any kind, which is hilarious.
So the son only found out because the company that he was subleasing from, Eastside Studios, was in a dispute with the landlord, the real estate firm Strand, and Eastside Studios had emailed city council for help in their long-term future and deciding whether they would be able to keep this, because I guess Strand is looking at demolishing the warehouse at some point, I believe, as part of the St. Paul's move to East Van there. Uh-huh. That's kind of irrelevant. What happened, though, is during this back and forth between the landlord and the studio, the city asked for a little bit more information about what's happening in the warehouse, and they're like, oh, there's a storing and packing of cleaning products. Are those in compliance with local zones? And it turned out, technically, no. If you don't have a business license, you're not in compliance with the law. What's great here, though, is Dave Payson's comments to the Vancouver Sun, where he says, I was going to apply for a license, and I was so busy I forgot, but I made damn sure I applied for a license for our new building. I dropped the ball. We got so busy, it just wasn't a priority.
Right. You wouldn't want to, like, ensure the legal right to operate within the place where you are operating. Like, it's, especially if you're doing something with cleaning products, like, that just seems unwise.
Yeah, Fumano goes and gets some comments from, like, the fire inspector, who points out, like, this could put firefighters at risk if they had to go into this building and there was chemicals laying around in ways that hadn't been run by city officials, essentially.
Yeah.
The rules seem onerous, but they exist for a reason.
Do better. Do better. Like, it's fucking inexcusable that someone would be this remiss about the operation of their business for 6 months. Like, I don't know if he's going to run for anything again, but at least this is a one-round timeout in my mind. Like, this is egregious and absurd. Someone should know better. And,
yeah, he says his involvement in civic politics is unrelated to his business, but I think his ability to run his business is a matter for whether he should have further involvement in civic politics.
Also, your business is unrelated to civic politics, but, like, I don't, you know, one of your board colleagues is suing someone because theirs is just too close. As opposed to this, which is an actual permitting issue. Like, he was operating against city rules, as opposed to the Weeb issue, which was barely the shadow of a conflict of interest. Infuriating. And yeah, I think you should resign from the MPA and not seek office in the next election until you have demonstrated that you are wise enough to city rules to give a shit about them. We made damn sure we needed to get something for the next warehouse. Well, fine. But not good enough. Also not good enough? Surrey.
Jeez. Speaking of not wanting to worry about the rules, a new motion was defeated in Surrey City Council. This motion came from Councillor Jack Hundyle, who wanted the city to develop a territorial acknowledgement before council and committee meetings. This motion, I believe he'd actually asked staff at a previous council and gotten a unanimous vote to start moving towards this. But in this past week, council, led by Mayor Doug McCallum and the Safe Surrey Coalition, killed the motion, allegedly, Councillor Brenda Locke says, because they didn't want a territorial acknowledgement legislated.
What a stupid thing to say. Like, I can't even... Unless she is going to stand up at the beginning of every meeting and do the acknowledgement herself, this is the kind of thing that you have to legislate. Because we're trying to burn the memory of all the terrible things that the state has done into our institutions. That is how you do it. The Catholic Church is very strict on many things, but one thing that it is very clear on is that imperfect contrition is still a form of contrition. Like, you can be sorry, and saying sorry is an important act, even if you don't mean it in the moment. And I suspect that it becomes more and more important the more you say it. I don't think the territorial acknowledgments are something that loses force as they become more common.
Well, and it's one of those things where they get a lot of flack for being like easy symbolic window dressing that you can do without doing real meaningful reconciliation work. And I think those criticisms are valid, but it's also easy to point out that, like, if you can't do the bare minimum, can we really trust you to do the additional steps? Like, Surrey has an urban indigenous strategy, but do indigenous peoples have faith in that now that council has said, we don't really want to legislate any of this stuff?
I wouldn't have faith in it. I would be pretty skeptical if the council wasn't even going to acknowledge that there is, like, it's the price of admission to reconciliation. Like, it's something that you need to do in order to even be considered as active. It's not something that, like, what is Surrey City Council's game plan going forward on this? Are you just going to do it every, like, were you doing it every time and you've just decided to not do it anymore? Or are you going to continue to do this on an ad hoc basis until, like, at some point someone forgets that, like, neither of those two options is particularly palatable to me.
Yeah, and BC Assembly of First Nations Regional Chief Terry TG called out Surrey Council in a statement saying, you know, it's especially concerning considering the large indigenous population in the city of Surrey. Like, this rejection is a rejection of a simple and respectful step towards those people.
Yeah.
Disappointing.
Yeah, it is disappointing. I think Surrey City Council should rethink this as soon as they can. One of the benefits to this is that it's never too late to change. We've already done so much bad that, like, starting to change now, it's not going to be too late. Like, the damage has, and admittedly continues to be done, but it's never too late to stand up and be like, oh yeah, okay, yeah, we've built our entire society on a crime,
on a genocide.
Yeah, like, theft, breached faith, and, you know, the big unspeakable genocide that we continue to be complicit in ways. So, Surrey City Council, reconsider this. Make sure that you do it at the beginning of every meeting. It's always disappointing when you have to resort to a fight in public for resolving your disputes. Even more unfortunate when it should be resolved as a private matter. The thing that has come out of Surrey is someone's being forced to break up with their dog because of the Strata Property Act.
Yeah, it sounds like this individual is going to probably move. This owner has a dog, a golden retriever, that she contends is a very nice dog, a good boy. But the Strata has said this dog violates our bylaw against dogs that are over 14 inches high at the shoulders. Your dog is too tall for our building, which is among the more, like, Stratas get a lot of weird bylaws, and this is among the more petty, it feels like.
It is very petty. It also, I don't think, really hits the nail on the head on what generally Stratas are supposed to be doing with their bylaws, which is, one, preventing nuisance to other residents, and that's fine, but also doing that in a way that is most effective. And dogs don't scale with their, like, their annoyance does not scale with the size of the dog.
If anything, it's inverse.
Yeah.
The small dogs can be quite
small
yappy.
Small dogs are yappy. It's...
it's weird.
Now, it's very frustrating, and I think that there is some case that, she could be made, especially since the letter read, your dog is already taller than the bylaw permits, And as such, the Strata Council voted that you must remove the dog from the premises. Now, a strictly legalistic view does not indicate that they want it kept away, but that is just for people who are not really practicing the law, but like pedantic law. But it is very unfortunate that she can't resort to, like, one, this golden retriever being permitted previously, and I'm not sure if the Strata Council like was unaware that the dog was going to be a golden retriever when it was purchased. Like, I don't know what the kind of approval process was previously, but it seems just overhand.
Yeah, the article also points out that they spoke to a couple other owners, some who are surprised that this individual is being singled out because they've seen similarly sized dogs in the building, and those people haven't been asked to get rid of their pets. They know there are a number of owners who have two pets, which contravenes bylaw against having more than one pet, I guess, in this building. The owner, Marani, she speculates that these other owners who happen to be in violations are Caucasians, and she's one of the only visible minorities that's been asked to get rid of her pet, sort of speculating at racial issues, but not outright saying it. Ugly situation.
It is an ugly situation.
And Stratas have too much power.
Yeah, Stratas do have too much power. And I also just want to remind people that mediators exist. And that you can probably avoid quite a bit of trouble if you have a civil dispute and decide to go pay a mediator for a couple hours rather than, well, basically the only thing that she would be able to do otherwise is like take action in the civil resolution tribunal.
Which, having done, I will say is actually a fairly straightforward process, and I highly recommend it. Unless the person you're against files a notice of objection and then you have to end up in small claims court. Then things get much more complicated.
But, you know, as always, the first thing that you should do is talk to someone. See if you can get things down in the minutes, if it is going to be a Strata Council meeting. It is terribly unfortunate that someone is going to have to move because of, well, what sounds like it is probably just a bylaws, the expression of racism through bureaucracy.
Well, speaking of violating the rules and the laws and the public health orders, a number of churches have been in the news, evangelical generally, I believe, across BC, a small number, about a dozen, who are continuing to hold in-person gatherings, in-person church services during the pandemic when the public health orders have closed all of the churches and places of worship. This has led the township of Langley to consider stripping some of the tax breaks they give these churches and whether that might be something they can do in addition to the province fining them a whole bunch of money.
Yeah. And so it should be, I think, expound upon the actual nature of the tax exemption for churches system, or places of worship, rather. There is a statutory exemption for the buildings themselves, like the church or the mosque or the gurdwara or temple, synagogue, etc. There is a building. That building is always going to be statutorily tax exempt. What is not the case is any of the ancillary stuff, if there's like a manse on the property, if there is a school on the property, if there is a parking lot, all of those have property tax attached to them, and there is a discretionary opt-out for those things, which municipalities have been generally okay with providing to these institutions.
Yeah, with the BC Humanist Association, I've actually done some work looking at this, and about two-thirds of cities just grant all religious organizations these permissive tax exemptions for these additional properties. And like you said, they range from parking lots to ancillary buildings to, in some places, even their thrift shops and the social enterprises, or even empty lots in places that will be developed in the future. Some municipalities are starting to shift how they think about these and wondering whether to tie a public benefits test, or to, in some places, they've ruled them out. And they don't give any permissive tax exemptions, even to secular charities. And they just provide grants to the organizations they like. Vancouver actually does that. The city of Vancouver doesn't give permissive tax exemptions. That said, here in Langley, they are looking at this and saying, since this is a voluntary option, the township is going, well, if they're violating the law, should they be getting tax exemptions? And could we take that away? A counselor brought that forward. It passed, but it's going to go to staff review to make sure they don't end up in court over this, which they probably will.
They will.
Because these organizations are already suing the province.
Yeah, and I mean, fair enough. Everyone can have their day in court. But honestly, I would have preferred that their day in court be for violating the public health order. I am unsympathetic to people who just demand exemptions based on, well, because I feel like it. I take just as much, you know, comfort and solace in seeing a particular group of people or being able to go out to, like, just hang out with people or anything. And we don't get to do that right now. I'm sorry, but neither do you. I don't think that you have a case. I don't think that you are really taking into account the like situation around you and how cruel and callous you seem, not only endangering yourselves, but like creating a situation in which this thing can spread, this virus can spread. It's not acceptable.
Well, and it's worth mentioning, right, and saying it, the overwhelming majority of religious congregations in this province, I mean, they're not happy to follow this health order, but they are willing to do their part the same way we all are. Like, none of us want to be here. You know, the province has worked with them.
No one's and happy fulfilling the health. Yeah. What kind of lunatic would you be to be happy filling? Like, no one is that introverted.
Shut in.
Yeah, but like, they're not fulfilling. They're just living their lives as they would. Like, no harm, no foul. This is like taking your desires and putting it ahead of other religious institutions, of other people, of your community at large. And yeah, you should lose your permissive tax breaks for the suggestion has been for 1 year. I find this so repulsive that I would be inclined to do it for longer.
Every municipality has the option to set it for as long as they want. Some, I think, try to do it indefinitely, but it's basically something to be renewed. And so definitely worth reviewing. Yeah. I mean, the idea of charitable status is that you can't commit unlawful acts. That's specifically in the CRA guidelines. And I'm not sure if violating public health orders seems like it counts as an unlawful act, an activity. So
it doesn't feel lawful. It doesn't seem lawful. But, you know, sometimes these laws are very Byzantine and you don't know what to do. You know where that also might come into play? Vancouver City Development. So there is, I'm going to hide my bitterness here a moment, because I had been wanting to do a project with some of the developers that I know on following a construction project from inception to completion, including like taking a look at the Vancouver development permits and all the hoops that must be jumped through. Francis Beulah, friend of the show, has actually gone ahead and done that, as opposed to just sort of leaving it in the back shelves of her mind, as I have done, and has charted the adventure that she went through when trying to build a laneway house.
Yeah, she's just written up the first of a four-part series for the Globe and Mail, documenting, you know, how it went from her idea, you know, her family's idea of, oh, we have the privilege of having this nice lot and we'd like to have our family live near us because of the situations that we're in. What will that take? And, you know, even in the first part, it's like, well, we spent a year between our engineers, architects, and the city just trying to understand the rules of things like setbacks and height restrictions and all of these other things that seemed like moving targets.
Yeah, and they can feel a lot like moving targets because there are so many different zoning classifications. Like, I sit on the Board of Variants, and I have a hard time keeping track of, like, what seems appropriate for an RS versus an RS5 versus an RS8, et cetera, and so on and so forth like that. The idea that, like, I'm doing that because I am engaged and involved and am interested in it and have, like, effectively volunteered to do that kind of thing. The other people on the board are also, like, interested and engaged in the development industry to some greater or lesser extent. It's so insane to expect individuals who, like, don't have the ability to rely on city development or the legal firm of a large construction company to be able to, without assistance, develop a city, basically, or develop even just like one small property within a city. But still, there is a large unmet need for, I think, a company that is able to provide this kind of guidance to people and shepherd people through the process. If we continue to make it impossible to build on this sort of granular level, it is going, like, these types of programs, like Kennedy Stewart's Sixplex idea, will never, ever be able to fulfill the needs of the city.
Yeah, whether it's a private consulting firm or the city taking up the task of either simplifying its processes for the people they want to follow these, or building out the capacity to help people through this, because the goal of these guidelines isn't to stop people from building. It's to help ensure it meets certain criteria that someone thought up. Now, maybe not all of the setbacks are the most useful criteria in 2021. Not my area of expertise by any stretch. Francis Beulah, person who's been following city politics for decades, has struggled with this. Like, it's got to be easier.
It's hard. Like, I have to, I will ask when something comes up and, like, so why did this setback get chosen for this type of lot in this neighborhood rather than another? And city staff usually has an answer. They're like, city staff is very good at responding to my questions, but then again, I am on the board itself, so I can imagine that my ability to interface with city staff who are on the line to answer the questions is perhaps different from the everyday consumer.
So look for Frances's piece. We'll try and get her on the show to talk about this in the future, because it's really interesting stuff.
It is fascinating. Also, if you have any, like, construction success or horror stories, I don't want to be entirely negative here, but either within the city of Vancouver proper or in one of the other municipalities, I would be very interested in speaking to you about a kind of compare and contrast system. It is hard to get everything right in Vancouver, and my suspicion is that it is, like, because it is highly overregulated. What those regulations should be is, like, there should be some, obviously, but it's going to take some time to work through the system and make sure that those things that are cut are appropriate ones. However, we're not even in the system at a point where we are even considering cuts, so please do get in touch if you have anything interesting to say on the subject of development permits. We look forward to bringing that to you in future. One thing that we always end the show with is our Vancouverada, a little tidbit of history from our municipal past. What is our Vancouverada today?
I wanted to talk about Lulu Island, the island that the city of Richmond sits on, which is bordered by the Fraser River estuaries on the north and south, and is pretty much a infill of, it's just a bunch of sand, essentially, that we built a city on.
A state of affairs that will never come back to bite us.
Yeah.
Ever.
It's why I'm never going to live in Richmond, as nice as some parts of it appear. But I'm curious about discussing how it got its name. Now, its British name, obviously.
Yeah. So let me, as a bit of a bonus, the British Foreign Office gave, or as it was at the time, the Foreign and Colonial Office, was very clear to its explorers, please do not name things. Please try and get local names. We would like to be able to ask for directions. And that advice was, as you can probably guess, not heeded. And so we get things like Burrard Inlet and Quadra Point and Lulu Island, which are named basically by the prerogative of, well, whiteness, I guess.
Yeah. So Lulu Island is named after Miss Lulu Sweet, who was a young stage actress from the U.S. who, along with a theatrical troupe, was performing in British Columbia in the 1860s. She was doing shows from New Westminster all the way to Victoria. And allegedly, the story goes that Colonel Moody, one of the Royal Engineers who was surveying the area, was accompanying Miss Sweet on the deck of a boat as they went down the Fraser River on the way to Victoria, and he was pointing out landmarks, and she asked him what the island that would become Richmond was called, and he replied that it had no name, but in tribute to you, we shall call it Lulu Island. Allegedly, he may have even said, by Jove, I'll name it after you.
I'm sure it had no name. Like, I appreciate that, like...
really awkward flirting. She was 16 at the time as well.
Oh, gross. Okay. Well, okay.
Roughly. Might have been a little bit older.
I am mildly pleased that, like, the island upon which Richmond sits is named for a woman of color, but the way that that happened is not ideal.
Yeah, she may have been of Kanaka or Hawaiian origin. That's unclear.
We're not even sure.
It says possibly in the Wikipedia article.
Well, I'm going to try and believe that she was, because otherwise there is literally nothing redeemable about this entire story. That is great. This is the same Moody after which, like, Moodyville and Port Moody and, like, that's that guy, I assume?
I believe there's only been one. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Richard Moody. Well, what a time. This has been a hell of a week. There's only a few more days to go of, hopefully, of this monster presidency and the thing that I have basically been holding my breath for since, since mid-2015, hopefully, is going to resolve itself. And we'll be back in a couple weeks with a new episode. Hopefully a little more excited and not... tensioned to within an inch of my life by events geopolitical.
Indeed. This weekend might not go great, but just after that we should be past. No. Although tomorrow's my birthday, so maybe I'll just ignore the news entirely.
Yeah, I was thinking of ignoring the news entirely, at least so much as I am capable of doing such. I really appreciate that screen time app on my phone where it's just like, oh, you've been using the CBC News app too much. Time to shut it down. And then I leave. It's great. It's amazing.
Stop reading the news. Keep listening to podcasts. We'll talk to you in 2 weeks.
Yeah. All right. Bye.
Bye.